Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, February the 2nd, and welcome to our commentary. Well, the worst part of the winter storm is over now. Now we're just getting some rain on Thursday afternoon, and it's going to go up significantly over the weekend. So this whole thing will just be a bad memory in a couple of days. But, you know, you just, all you do is sit in and let the ice storm happen. That's kind of what happens around here. You know, everybody kind of stays in the house and you don't get to do anything. And you go out a little bit as much as you can, but, you know, the ice gets on the sidewalks and even on the grass, and it can be pretty dangerous. You can fall down and hurt yourself. So, but it's over. It's over, which is good, which is good. You know, it's kind of nice to see the pictures, some of the pictures, you know, the ice and the snow, a little bit of it on the trees. But when you realize that there's just a lot of ice out there and that everything comes to a stop, then it's not such a good thing. One good thing is that the Texas power grid held up quite well. And this is, you know, this is a good thing. There were some outages, but that's because sometimes the ice accumulates in some of the cables and, you know, brings down the cables, and that, of course, stops the electricity. But overall, the power grid did extremely well, and we didn't have that problem as well as the ice storm. You know, 2 years ago, we had the ice, the snow, the low temperatures, and then on top of that, no electricity. That was a bummer. That was a bummer. And I'm glad to see that the power grid this time did not collapse as it did a couple of years ago. Well, let me begin. I have a post over at the American Thinker today talking about the Minnesota, this new Minnesota abortion law. I mentioned it briefly yesterday. What they did in Minnesota, of course, is that they wrote their own abortion law. But it's awfully extreme. It's basically abortion without limits, which is about as extreme as it gets. You know, it's one thing to say, well, abortion in the first 10 weeks, 12 weeks, 15 weeks, rape, incest, obviously, if the mother's health is in question, that has always been the exception. But what you saw in Minnesota is really the combination of extreme politics with abortion. And not a single Democrat in the Minnesota State Senate was willing to stand up and say, yes, I think a woman should have the right to an abortion, but there ought to be some limits to it. Not a single Democrat was willing to do that. So as it turned out, it passed 34-33, a radical abortion law. And then I say radical because this is not where the public is. The public is somewhere in the middle, meaning that the public believes that a woman should have the right to an abortion, but within certain restrictions. That's where the public is. And I've often, in these videos and some of the podcasts, I've mentioned the Mississippi law. The Mississippi law is the one that brought down Roe v. Wade. That one is a 15 weeks law. Basically, you've got 15 weeks to have an abortion. I think that's where most of the country is, by the way. I think most of the country wants something like that. They want an abortion for a woman who wants to have one. They certainly believe in case of rape or incest, there should be, or at least a window should be open for an abortion. And then, of course, 15 weeks seems to be the kind of the acceptable line. 12 to 15 weeks is what a lot of countries have. Ireland had a referendum on abortion a few years ago, and they passed a 12-week window for abortion. But this idea that abortion is legal in the entire pregnancy, and then on top of that, you've got people celebrating with, you know, like some major accomplishment. As I said before, I think this is when fanatical politics meets abortion, and you get these outrageous decisions or outrageous pieces of legislation that, you know, are just beyond me. And that's what my post is at the American Thinker today. Now, there is good news. A future legislature could change the law and at least put some restrictions in, at least have some restrictions on abortion on demand in Minnesota. That could happen. And in the next election, that could happen. Again, it was only one vote. It was 34-33. So elections have consequences. And I've said before, The Democrats were very effective, not in the whole country, but in certain parts of the country, they were very effective in 2022 in using abortion as an issue to generate a turnout. And I think they did it in Michigan and they did it in Minnesota. And in both of those cases, they were able to flip a Republican state legislature to the Democrats' hand, not by a lot, but by enough that they could pass an abortion law like this. I mean, it's obscene. That's all I can say. And then the celebration that came after, that's even more obscene. I just don't know how else to tell you. Well, here's some good news. Governor Sarah Huckabee, just elected governor in Arkansas. Of course, she's the daughter of the other Governor Huckabee, who not only ran for president, but who's got a very popular television show on Saturday nights over at TBN. She's going to be delivering the Republican reply to the State of the Union address. I think she's an excellent choice. This is a new face in the party, probably a little bit too young to be considered presidential material. Maybe vice presidential material, although I think the field is so, or the bench is so deep with other more experienced candidates that I don't see her in 2024, but I can see her down the road. She's very articulate. She's very likable. And like her father, she's got a great personality. So she's got all the elements of what could be a successful presidential candidate. Now, of course, she's got to deliver. She's got to deliver as governor. And we have to give her time to do that. But she is, she's a great choice, absolutely great choice to deliver the Republican reply to President Biden's State of the Union, which I think is coming up in the next couple of weeks. I'm not sure, but sometime in the next couple of weeks, he will be delivering that. Well, this is just an amazing story. These next two points, I want to combine them. Hunter Biden's laptop and the Russia story. There has just been published a tremendous, it's a multi-party, multi-part article that came out in the Columbia Journal Review, or Columbia Journalism Review. This is a prestigious magazine published by the Columbian Journalism School, considered by many to be one of the top journalism schools in the country. And they've just written a very critical story of the American news media regarding the Russia story. Remember the Russia story, that Russia was connected to Trump and all these, you know, anonymous sources, you know, tipping the news agencies who were running one story after another of this connection and that connection. All of it turned out to be false. The Mueller report couldn't find anything. And now we've apparently come to the conclusion that the whole thing was a fake. And we're doing it through some of these articles that are being written. Also, Twitter has been publishing a lot of stuff, once again, proving that the whole thing was a joke. But the Russia story was a big problem for President Trump's during his term, because they were basically, you know, they had this cloud over President Trump regarding Russia, and President Trump couldn't govern because he had all these investigations going on and this and this and this and this and that regarding Russia and all these stories. And this Russia story was basically consuming the media. It all turned out to be false. Everything was false about the whole thing. And if you read the Columbia Journalism Review article, they come down very hard on many of these reporters who simply didn't do their homework, who simply didn't want to do the kind of fact-finding necessary to realize that they were pushing a bad story, the Russia story. And that kind of ties into the other part of this, which is Hunter Biden's laptop. You know, about 2 weeks or a month before the November 2020 election, the New York Post came out with a story about Hunter Biden's laptop. And, you know, the idea was that this laptop belonging to Hunter Biden had information regarding his relationship with his father and so on. And this particular story, number one, it was rejected by Twitter and Facebook because they said they had no evidence to publish it. Then you had 50 so-called experts sign a letter saying that this was Russia disinformation, the laptop. Well, now it turns out that Hunter Biden is admitting that it was his laptop. I guess he's admitting that whatever is in there was in there. And that, of course, crushes once again many of the arguments against President Trump. And you have to wonder, about that second debate. If you remember the second debate, the first debate didn't go well for President Trump, because I think this is right before he had COVID, and maybe he even had COVID at the time of the debate. I don't remember, but he didn't look good. He looked angry. He didn't look good. But in the second debate, clearly he was much better than than candidate Joe Biden. And in that debate, the Hunter laptop came up, and President Trump, of course, kept directing, trying to put the emphasis on Hunter Biden and the corruption, and Joe Biden. And Joe Biden kept, fighting back, saying, well, these 50 experts say that this story is this information. So in the end, the Hunter Biden laptop story, this whole story, was basically denied to the American people. The American people were never told the truth about the story, because the story was not explored by the media. The media basically gave the story a pass and would not investigate it. Well, it turns out that it was his laptop, and it turns out that, it could be a problem for Hunter Biden. And again, I'm not that worried about Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden has his own problems. But the real problem is whatever relationship there was between the father and the son. That's the problem, whether it was a monetary relationship or whether now with these documents, whether Hunter Biden was using some of these documents to do business. I don't know. All of this has to be proven. But the American people were never given an opportunity to look at this. And you really begin to ask yourself, that debate, that second debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump back in 2020 would have been totally different if we had known the relationship of that laptop and Hunter Biden. And that was kind of denied back then. So that was, that was the case, I think, where the media didn't do the country any good. And the net results, I think it clearly helped Joe Biden. I mean, I sincerely believe that the election would have been different had that information been known on Election Day 2020. So where is this going to go? I don't know. But I would love to see some people in the media at the very least apologize to their viewers and to their readers by saying, you know what, we goofed. We didn't do our work. And we didn't do our work on this story. And as a consequence, the American people were cheated in knowing the information on that story. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Enjoy yourselves. And now that the weather is nicer here in North Texas, maybe this weekend we can finally go out and catch a little sunshine. Have a great day, everybody. Talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.